Morning. You're listening to Conservation Corner on 99.5 FM, KTWHLP, Two Harbors, Minnesota. I'm your host, Emily Nelson, and today I'm speaking with Kenny Blumenfeld, Senior Climatologist for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources State Climatology Office, which collects, manages, archives, analyzes, and disseminates climate information for the people of Minnesota. Their office is based on the University of Minnesota St. Paul campus. Thank you for joining me.
So I wanted to start off with just a basic summary of climate science and what's happening. What are the main players as far as the different gases and sources for those gases?
So, I mean, climate science is an old discipline. It has its roots in geography and meteorology, and it goes back, depending on how you look at it, hundreds, if not even thousands of years. We always wanted to understand the atmosphere so we could understand what weather was coming, as, you know, hundreds or thousands of years ago we were prepared for hunt or for building or for, maybe relocating or for war. And that a lot of that sort of desire to be prepared is what drove the science of weather forecasting. And then, as people started making observations, they started realizing there are patterns that you can see on the landscape that reflect dominant sort of weather types. So some places tend to be warm and sunny, and some places tend to be cool and dry, and some places tend to be wet. And you could see vegetation and other kinds of landscape signatures of these different prevailing weather types. And that's really trying to understand that, trying to understand the interaction between what's happening with the weather over sort of long periods and what happens with, things that we rely on the land, is kind of what drove the beginning of climatology. And in order to fully understand what's going on, which is a quest, we're still on this quest. We haven't gotten there. We haven't arrived yet. But in order to really understand all these relationships, it requires more than just knowing how many times it's sunny, how warm it is, and how frequently it rains. But instead, we have to understand something about the atmosphere, mm-hmm. which means we have to understand gravity. We have to understand three-dimensional fluid mechanics, which gets a little bit wonky. We have to understand the atmospheric chemistry. And then we also have to understand the physics of motion and heat transfer. And it becomes pretty complicated. And over the about the middle part of the 20th century, during the Cold War era, both the Soviets and the Americans started really trying to understand this larger global climate system. Part of it was because they were both paranoid about what the other country would do if it was able to manipulate the climate. And part of it was just, you know, the general spirit of inquiry. But a lot of the big breakthroughs came when everybody was afraid. And we started understanding and trying to see the Earth climate system as an integrated whole with numerous working interdependent components. And it was really around that time, as people started adding this information into what they already knew about the very basic climate system, that they realized that industry was potentially altering some of the chemistry of the, you know, just the sort of natural consequence of progress, was that we were altering the chemistry of the atmosphere. And in particular, there was some concern that had been written about perhaps 100 years earlier by, I would say, more adventurous scientists for their time, that, you know, these so-called greenhouse gases, which are the ones that can absorb heat naturally escaping from the Earth, were being intensified by a lot of these industrial processes. And so really, since I would say 1965 to 1970, right through present, there's been this growing awareness that as we put things in the atmosphere, and we're talking about methane and especially carbon dioxide and also water vapor, which is what you think of as humidity, that these in particular are very effective greenhouse gases, and that they are often natural byproducts of the things that make, you know, that most people think make society better and more livable. And so where the science currently stands with this is that there has been a growing, and when I say growing, I mean the number of scientists who understand it is growing. And when I say scientific consensus, I really mean not everybody agrees on exactly the same thing, but those who get it because they understand and they're scientifically competent to understand what's going on in the atmosphere, accept that not only have we altered the chemistry of the atmosphere with additional carbon dioxide and water vapor and methane, but also that altered chemistry of the atmosphere has changed and, in fact, increased the temperature of the lower atmosphere where we live. And there are various feedbacks between these greenhouse gases and the surface of the Earth and other things that interact with it, but that in general, these interactions and feedbacks have led to a warming of the planet. And the primary source of this has been industrial greenhouse gas emissions, but a secondary and often understated source has also been the loss of trees through deforestation. And when you combine those two, you have the effect of adding a lot of carbon dioxide to the atmosphere, much more than you would see from normal annual fluctuations as the seasons in the northern hemisphere turn on and off, and then the seasons in the southern hemisphere turn on and off, and more than you would see from natural trends in the sort of variability that we would often see as you go through different sunspot cycles or as the Earth goes through natural warming and cooling periods associated with its orbital path around the sun. So that's sort of the basis. So right now we're at a point where we know that the Earth is warming. It's warmed, depending on whose numbers you like best, somewhere around 1 degree Celsius, little give or take a little bit, which is about 1.8 degrees Fahrenheit since the Industrial Revolution. But I think it's worth noting that an awful lot of those changes have really occurred since the late 1960s or early 1970s, that we had a very subtle warming through the early 20th century, and it really has taken off in the last 40, 50 years.
Okay, and that's an average number.
Average global temperature, yes.
I mean, it's different across the globe. Are there places that are seeing much bigger rises in temperature?
Yeah, and Minnesota is one of them. I don't want to bore all the listeners with the basis of how the greenhouse effect works, but really what it does, it's not a heating mechanism. It doesn't make things hotter. That's one of the big misnomers, and I think it's a source of a lot of confusion, misunderstanding, and argument about among the public. It's not that it makes things hotter. It does not intensify the sunlight. What it does is it prevents you from cooling down. It prevents the Earth from cooling down. In fact, it's most effective when the sun isn't shining, because that's when the heat that's been stored up during the day or during the summer really escapes from the Earth. And so if you think of areas that receive a huge imbalance of sunlight, say they receive a lot more during the summer than they do during the winter, and really shed a lot of that sunlight, that heat stored from the sunlight at night and at winter, those are the places that have sort of the most to lose, because they cool down the fastest typically, either at night or seasonally. And so where we've seen a lot of the big changes, a lot of the warming is in places like northern latitudes that are in the middle of continents. Does that sound like us yet? We're actually a mid-latitude technically, but we're in the middle of North America, and you know, Minnesota's generally around 45 to 48 degrees north latitude. Northeastern Minnesota's a little higher latitude than the southern part of the state. But we obviously are known for having sharp differences between summer and winter, and we lose a lot of that heat during winter. And Minnesota and Canada and parts of the Arctic and also parts of Central Siberia are seeing some of the fastest warming on the planet, and that's because we have typically such a strong cooling effect in the winter, and now that is being offset.
So I know people talk a lot about the differences between weather and climate change, but have there been some trends in Minnesota showing warming over the last few decades?
So Minnesota has this long-term warming trend that I mentioned before, and you could take it back to about 1895, which is, we can push our statewide sort of large regional data sets back about that far anyway. And you see a general increase in temperature over the state going back to 1895. And just to give people a sense of, it averages about a quarter, it's actually a little less than a quarter of a degree Fahrenheit mm-hmm. per decade. About, 0.23 degrees Fahrenheit per decade, which is 2.3 degrees Fahrenheit per century. That is the long-term warming trend. If we look at that same per decade trend, and it doesn't mean that every decade is warmer than the one before, or that there's exactly that amount. This is an average trend. If we look since 1970, the trend is much sharper. It's more like a half a degree Fahrenheit. So, mm-hmm. so we've essentially doubled the rate of warming. The long-term rate of warming essentially doubled when we got to 1970. And further, Minnesota's warming is driven by wintertime warming, mm-hmm. And it's also strongest in northern Minnesota. So your listeners are seeing some of the sharpest warming, and most of it's in the winter. Now, we're still getting warmer in the summer, but we're especially getting warmer at night in the summer. But our strongest warming by far is what's happening at night in the winter. In northern Minnesota, where warming rates are in excess of 1 degree Fahrenheit per decade, meaning that if you take the current warming trend and you run it for 100 years for wintertime, nighttime temperatures, you would expect a 10-degree average warming rate over, you know, parts of northern, northeastern Minnesota. So it's the same thing that we just talked about. We have this sort of long-term general trend. It's been intensified over the last four decades. It is strongest at night and in the wintertime, and it's also strongest in northern Minnesota. And one of the stats that we often use is that we are seeing warming in the summertime in mm-hmm. Minnesota, but it's mostly night times. We're not seeing increase in heat waves, but our winter is warming 10 times faster than summer. And I'm sure folks are familiar with the term statistical significance, or they'll say, oh, that's not significant. The warming in the summer is marginally significant, meaning you can't quite hang your hat on it. And in fact, if we cut the state into pieces, we see areas that are actually cooling in the summer compared to other parts of the state. But for winter, it is strongly significant. This warming that we're seeing is without a doubt. And I think everybody can relate to this, because you just have to think of what used to be considered really cold is now considered kind of rare. What things that used to be common are sort of rare. Things that used to be the kind of coldest temperatures of the year, we don't even get to those anymore. And our now kind of coldest temperatures of the year are warmer than they've ever been. And most people, no matter what they think of the science or their understanding of it, if they've lived in northern Minnesota, where, you know, we're still getting pretty good snow in northern Minnesota yet. But most people go, oh, yeah, that's true. We used to see 40 below 4 or 5 times a winter, and now if we see it once every 2 winters, we're lucky. Or, you know, yeah, we used to just spend so much more time below zero than we do now. And so it becomes something that people are familiar with when you talk about winter, whereas get into summer, it's much fuzzier.
Yeah.
Really is.
Yeah, it is. How about precipitation?
Oh, yeah. Precipitation is a complicated one. We see the same long-term trend. And one of the jokes when I give presentations is it almost looks like I just take the same graph shape and just superimpose it onto different, like do something really lazy. But precipitation is increasing at a long-term rate of about a quarter of an inch per decade mm-hmm. in Minnesota. But doesn't show quite the same intensification since 1970. It does show a little bit of an uptick, but not the same that we see with precipitation. What's a little more notable is, I'm sorry, not the same as we see with temperature. What's a little more notable is that when you take apart the state, so we look at 9 different sort of equal area regions in Minnesota where we can do these same statistics. They're part of a national data set. Since 1970, the south part of Minnesota has gotten wetter faster than the north. So there's been a slight increase in that overall precipitation rate of increase, but it's really been dominated by what's been going on in the southern and also the western part of the state. And the northeastern part of the state since 1970 shows what we call intermediate term drying. It hasn't really gotten, it's not at all statistically significant, but it hasn't gotten wet at the same rate that that southern Minnesota has, or wetter. And in some instances, there's some stations where the trend is either flat or slightly declining. Now, again, this isn't statistically significant, but what it tells you is, okay, we look at northeastern Minnesota, where the temperatures are increasing faster than any other part of the state, but the precipitation is either not increasing or is going down slightly. That means the extra water that you would need to replace the water that is lost through increased temperatures isn't there. So we have not entered any kind of a drought-type situation from a climatological or a hydrological standpoint. I want to make that clear. The water balance hasn't really shifted all that much, but tell that to some of the trees in northeast Minnesota that have experienced hydrothermal stress. There just isn't enough water over the decades now to keep them healthy and growing. And plus, you know, the temperatures are increasing in a manner that's pushing a lot of these trees out of their comfort zones. So that's the less clean version with mm-hmm. precipitation. And an important piece of that is that even though precipitation has potentially gone flat or even declined in parts of northeastern Minnesota, the whole state, every single section of the state, has seen an increase in heavy precipitation.
Yes.
So it's not like we have just kept the same climate that we had with regards to precipitation. The character of it has changed. We're actually seeing fewer days with precipitation over most of the state, or in some cases the same, but we're seeing an increase in the total amount in many cases, or in northeast Minnesota, it's, you know, holding steady, but with fewer days, meaning the average day where it actually rains is producing more.
Yeah, like we saw in the 2012 floods in Duluth.
Right.
And then I worked in Minnetonka doing water monitoring a couple of years ago, and yeah, it was Minnehaha Creek was flooding.
Well, 2014 was a record. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. Yeah, the flood in northeast Minnesota, you know, we always try and be careful because you can't necessarily, and you mentioned this before, there's weather and there's climate. And as climatologists, we want to be really careful not to say, well, this particular weather event proves a climate trend. But we can say one of the things we're seeing as our climate has gone through this sort of wetting or at least intensification of the hydrologic regimes, and as it's warmed, we have seen more of these big rainfall events. So there's no way we could definitively link 2012 in northeast Minnesota, that we really stretched from Two Harbors down to Moose Lake. There was a massive flood. We can't definitively link that to these other changes, but we can say that as we've had these other changes, we're seeing more of these sorts of episodes. And it, you know, in our office here, where we have a really good system for counting and measuring the size of these events, we call them mega rainfall events when they produce 6 inches of rain over about 1,000 square miles or more. And we can do this reliably back into the early 1970s because we've had a large number of observers over the state, over 1,000 observers over the state through that time. And we're just counting more of them now. I mean, we're seeing more of these events in our very tight net. Mm-hmm. That, you know, not a lot have probably slipped through since that time. In the last, since 2000, we've seen 7 of the 12 that we know about. So we're seeing more of these. And that lines up with what the science tells us to expect and what the scientific observations are saying we're seeing elsewhere.
I'd just like to remind everyone, you're listening to Conservation Corner on 99.5 FM, KTWH LP, Two Harbors, Minnesota. I'm Emily Nelson, and today I'm speaking with Kenny Blumenfeld, Senior Climatologist for the Minnesota DNR, and we're talking about climate change and its impacts in northeastern Minnesota.
I was going to ask about snowfall.
Sure.
And what, yeah. What kind of snowfall we've been seeing.
Yeah, snowfall is complicated because on one hand, it's dependent on winter, and we mm-hmm. know that at least the severity of winter temperatures is really dropping off. But you You also probably are familiar with this notion that when it's absolutely the coldest, that's not really when it snows. What the cold air does is it leaves a big cold air mass in place and sort of helps prime the atmosphere as a snowstorm moves in and keeps it from getting too warm. But the snowfall has not changed in the way you would expect if I told you that winter is shrinking from a temperature standpoint. Right now, the observation over the last few decades is that most stations are, on average, seeing more snow. Northeast Minnesota has had some of its snowiest winters in the era where it's also had some of its warmest winters. This is not a very simple problem climatologically, and I'm sure from a resource management standpoint either, because you know, you're changing the quality of the snow too. We are seeing, in general, across Minnesota, more kind of wet snows. We're tending to see more snowpack interruptions where you have snow, but then it melts, and then you get more snow. So when we, and the last thing I want to say is that observing snow is not quite like observing rain. We really appreciate all of our current snow observers and anybody who's ever put some sort of a measurement device into the snow historically. It's really valuable. But we know that there have been eras during which, an observer was already doing good service and it was much easier to just kind of take a peek out the window and it looks like 8 inches. Or there were periods where we knew that either what was happening was the observer was measuring the snow and then just using some sort of factor to estimate how much rain that must be. So dividing the snowfall by 10, for example, was a common one. Or they would actually melt the snow, come up with a rainfall amount, and then multiply by 10 without actually measuring it. And there are variations on that. And all this is to say, we adore snowfall. We love it, and we love it when people measure it, but the methods for measuring have changed. And so it's not quite as consistent as what you find with temperature. And that does make it a little harder to know where you have real trends and where you don't. But we're pretty confident. I've looked at a lot of the snowfall data across Minnesota that snowfall in general is increasing, even though the season for it might be shrinking. And when we look at the amount of time that a given location in Minnesota spends with a certain amount of snow on the ground, we know that's less. So if you kind of think of your snowpack as having a certain number of inches, and you think of your snowpack season as having a certain number of days, then you could kind of come up with this, you could call it inch days. How many inches days of snow are there? There's generally less. Even as the total snowfall has increased, you're just spending in Isabella, you're spending fewer days per winter with 24 inches of snow on the ground than you used to. Even if you're getting bigger snowfall events, there's just more melting happening or more compacting happening.
Well, how about touching on some of the impacts that we expect to see in northeast Minnesota?
Yeah, it's complicated because it's complicated and it's also not, but just like any other science, there are some things that we know better than other things. One of the obvious ones is that species are going to shift their geographic ranges and the distributions and phenology. So the onset dates are shifting. Mm-hmm. The first and last dates that certain communities establish themselves, these are changing. This also opens the door to new species that formerly could not be tolerated in the area. I mean, the list of potential impacts is actually huge. The list of, when I say huge, I mean, we could spend a whole day, but the list of known impacts is somewhat smaller. And with things like moose populations and Lyme disease, we know that there's other factors at play too. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we know that there's other management practices that are going to affect the conditions of these. We know that there's human dispersal in terms of some of the disease. I mean, where people are kind of matters for where the disease is reported, but that climate is, you know, at least in some of the studies, a driver. The, the way that organisms respond to climate change kind of determines which species and populations are going to win and which are not. And well, we're really complicating as the climate changes. As you see this warming, but maybe not moisture levels keeping up with that warming, we're getting an increasingly complex sort of climatic background. And so the changes aren't going to be even from one species to the next. You can kind of imagine the forests as you know it in northern Minnesota. Just imagine them shifting northward as a very simple-minded way of looking at it. You know, if some of the foresters who work for the state talk about, you know, even the boundary waters shifting from its currently kind of pristine forested forest cover type to one that's more of a savanna. You know,
Yeah, I've seen presentations by Lee Frelick about, you know, the future of that region.
Another thing we're seeing, you know, which is a whole other topic and probably another interview for someone else, but changes that are hard to quantify, but are definitely showing up in lakes, including our very large lake, Lake Superior. Lake Superior seems to be warming faster than even the land around it. There's some recent science that was done and published about, you know, lake temperatures are rising significantly faster than the air temperatures. Well, that is not a scientifically straightforward concept at all, because both the air and water are fluids and their behaviors might defy some of your assumptions about them. And then as we look into lakes themselves, you know, shallow lakes, which are going to be more susceptible to, you know, rapid warming and cooling, are really responding kind of quickly to the changes in climate in northern Minnesota. And that is starting to change the way organizations like the DNR want to manage fish habitats in those lakes, because, you know, shallow lakes becoming warmer aren't going to be cold water havens anymore. So, I mean, there's a lot. And I think for northeastern Minnesota, one of the things I would stress, we can look at natural resources. Winter recreation is really, well, we only know from people who call us in our office. And we heard a lot in the 2015-16 winter from people who ran resorts and ice fishing outfits. Or they have everything, including snowmobile and snowshoe rentals. And they didn't have those same opportunities last year. And we heard the same from some of the ski resorts. They're spending a lot more making snow. They have less time to do it. People are less enthusiastic about skiing because it seems warm so much. One of the big impacts that I think Minnesota is going to need to face, aside from those to the natural resources, is going to be recreational opportunities. You know, love it or hate it, no matter what you think about snowshoeing or snowmobiling, the opportunities for these are changing, and that is going to affect the economies of the parts of the state that thrive and that depend on those activities.
Well, thank you so much for talking to me.
Yeah, sure. Thanks. I hope this was helpful, and it's always good to be on.
Yeah. Thanks. Great.
Thank you all for tuning in to Conservation Corner here on 99.5 FM, KTWH LP, Two Harbors, Minnesota. Conservation Corner is produced by Lake County Soil and Water Conservation District, with funding from NOAA and the Office for Coastal Management, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and the Clean Water, Land, and Legacy Amendment. I'm Emily Nelson, and I hope you have a wonderful afternoon.